just defeated Uzbekistan 5-0 behind two goals from you-know-who.
Bruno Fernandes. Neto sprinting down the right. Ronaldo through the middle. It's Cristiano Ronaldo for Portugal. It's 3-0. And Ronaldo strikes again.
The call on Fox and the NBA, the Portland Trail Blazers are hiring Minnesota Timberwolves assistant coach Mike Anori as their new head coach. But the story here, his contract terms. The Athletic reports it's just a one-year deal with team options for each of the following two seasons. The NFL is declining to hold a supplemental draft this summer, meaning that former Texas Tech quarterback Brendan Sorsby will not be able to enter the NFL this year. Instead, Sorsby must wait until the 2027 NFL Draft.
Fox Sports Update on the Right Choice, KPRL, brought to you by Deeds Bar and Grill at the Paso Robles Golf Club. Great food, great view, great people. Prime Rib Monday, Taco Tuesday, specials on wine, and dinner specials Thursday through Saturday. Today in Farming on KPRL is brought to you by Paso Robles Glass, established in 1947, always up on the latest technology and training. They do windows right. Call Paso Robles Glass, 805-238-4014.
From the Ag Information Network, I'm Bob Larson with your Agribusiness Update. Well, the American Farm Bureau is now accepting applications for its 2027 Veteran Farmer Award of Excellence. The award, supported by Farm Credit, recognizes military veterans and active duty service members who have demonstrated excellence in agriculture while making a positive impact in their communities. The winner will receive a $10,000 cash prize along with travel expenses to attend the Farm Bureau's convention in Charlotte, North Carolina next January. Applications are due by September 1st. A new survey suggests artificial intelligence is gaining traction on America's farms and ranches, though many producers remain cautious about the technology. Research firm Morgan Myers found 75% of farmers and ranchers have used AI tools such as ChatGPT or Gemini, with nearly half of those users turning to the technology at least weekly. The survey found AI adoption is highest among dairy producers, young farmers, and large operations. Financial stress is mounting in Brazil's farm sector as auctions of seized farmland continue to climb. According to Reuters, rising debt troubles are forcing more Brazilian farmers into bankruptcy or loan defaults. Lower grain prices, higher interest rates, rising input costs, and weather-related crop losses have combined to squeeze farm profitability across the country. Problem loans account for nearly 20% of outstanding farm credit, up from just 5.5% 2 years ago.
Are you a cattle or sheep producer looking to market to a nationwide audience? If so, the consignment deadline for Western Video Market's 37th annual July sale in Reno is June 25th. Don't miss your chance to market your livestock in one of our nation's premier video auctions, July 13th through the 15th in Reno, Nevada. Reach top buyers from across the country. Contact your local Western Video Market rep today or visit WVMcattle.com. Western Video Market, let the professionals go to work for you.
When you see a cloud of flies over your herd, you're not just seeing flies. You're seeing lost weight gain and lost profit. Horn flies can drain cattle performance. SmartLick Fly Control Supplements use Clarify Larvicide or Altacid IGR to break the fly cycle where it starts. No spraying, no gathering cattle. Just put out the tub and protect your cattle. Treat the problem. Protect your profits. Go to SmartLick.com. That's SmartLIC.com to find your dealer.
From the Ag Information Network, I'm Bob Larson with today's Agribusiness Update.
Today in Farming on KPRL is brought to you by Paso Robles Glass, established in 1947, always up on the latest technology and training. They do windows right. Call Paso Robles Glass, 805-238-4014.
This Fox Business News Update on KPRL is brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
I'm Elizabeth MacDonald, and this is the Fox Business Report.
Stocks are mixed in afternoon trading, with the Dow trying to hold on to gains. However, the tech-heavy NASDAQ is lower as the tech sell-off continues on AI spending fears. However, battered software stocks like Salesforce are regaining some lost ground. And oil prices are slipping, easing inflation worries, with West Texas Intermediate crude at around $73 a barrel. And Carnival stock is falling 5%, despite the cruise operator reporting record second quarter revenue, but it was just a bit shy of expectations in its summer profit forecast disappointed investors. In a major move to capture changing consumer foot traffic, Bath & Body Works is expanding its retail footprint. The specialty retailer will be joining forces with Ulta Beauty to bring its products to Ulta's shops. The rollout happens on July the 12th and will reach more than 600 stores. That's your Fox Business Report. I'm Hillary Barsky, invested in you.
When I started skiing, I didn't think about setting any records. When I won my first race, I didn't think about how many more I might win. So when I made it to the top of the world, it never crossed my mind to stop. Being the best isn't the same as being your best. There are no shortcuts to the top, so find the people who help get you there. I'm Michaela Schifrin, and that's what Team Stifel means to me. If you're an advisor or an investor, choose Stifel, where success meets success.
Stifel Nicholas & Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
Past performance is no indication of future results. Investing involves risk. Consult a financial advisor before making any investment decisions.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
American Legends, next on KPRL. Brought to you by Davis Body Shop.
In order to leave the Soviet Union, a Soviet citizen must have 900 Russian rubles for a visa and more courage than is normally allotted to humankind. I'll be right back.
Reagan, in his own voice, is brought to you by K-Brush Concrete, serving the entire Central Coast for more than a decade. Call Kevin at K-Brush Concrete, 423-4033.
Russian law and the Universal Declaration of Human Rights fully entitle a citizen of the Soviet Union to an exit visa, meaning permission to leave there and live in another country. As a matter of fact, that Helsinki Pact they talked us into signing contains their pledge to let people live where they want to. Like yesterday's newspaper, the Helsinki Pact should be used for wrapping garbage. Literally thousands of Soviet citizens are in concentration camps for trying to obtain an exit visa. For other thousands, the price for seeking a visa is automatic dismissal from their jobs. One of the latter is Ida Nubel, born in Russia in 1931. She is Jewish. In a letter to a Soviet official, she wrote, "I was born and raised here. I am part of this land. But I am also part of another land as well, a land that is the dream of my people." Ida Nubel wants to go to Israel, wants to be a part of making the ancient prophecies of her religion come true. When she first applied for a visa in 1971, she was fired from her job in Moscow's Institute of Planning and Production. The excuse for not granting her a visa was that she is privy to state secrets. Ida Nubel's job was studying the standards of hygiene in food shops and the control of infection in various foods. She says, "The greatest secrets I had access to were where rats and mice build their nests." For 5 years, she's been without a job. In January 1975, she married Yul Brynd, who had obtained an exit visa before he met Ida. He was forced to leave Russia without her, and now lives in Israel. She is constantly watched, followed, and arrested for no reason whatsoever. In one 15-day period, she was arrested 5 times. In Moscow, arrests of this kind aren't what you see in Kojak on TV. Over the years, she has been forcibly seized, thrown into dark basement rooms, often disrobed and beaten on the pretense of a weapon search, left for days without food, lying on a vermin-infested floor. Ida Nubel is 45 years of age and has a history of heart trouble, but her medical card has been stamped alcoholic, which she is not. In the Soviet Union, that is standard practice for anyone they might want to bury in a mental institution. You'd think her own troubles would be all she had time for. But then we don't know this frail little 45-year-old lady. She is fondly referred to as the little angel by those imprisoned in labor camps. She sends them soup cubes, vitamins, medicines, and letters to boost them physically and spiritually. One prisoner after his release said, "There is no woman on earth whom we value more." She has written countless letters to Brezhnev and other leaders of the workers' paradise, not in her own behalf, but begging for the freedom of others and their right to leave Russia. Why don't we write some letters in behalf of Ida Nubel to the Soviet ambassador, the Soviet embassy, Washington, D.C.? It might worry him a little about detente to know how we feel. This is Ronald Reagan. Thanks for listening.
Reagan in his own voice, brought to you by K Brush Concrete. Anything to do with concrete, from a 5x5 walkway to a 500,000 square foot foundation. Call 423-4033.
Protecting what matters on The Right Choice, AM 1230, KPRL, 99.3 FM with Barry Fisher. Advice and information on protecting what matters most in today's world. Brought to you by Adler Belmont Insurance Brokers and their new associate, Heather Bordan, serving the commercial insurance needs of businesses on the Central Coast.
It's Tuesday. It's 1230. The bear is in the building. It's time for Protecting What Matters. PWM is the broadcast that helps you become better shoppers and buyers of services and products to protect various aspects of your life, health, and property. We also explore current events, our history, community, institutions, and local treasures that are notable and worth preserving. Our first guest, we're going to be tiptoeing through the Orchid Greenhouse in the first half hour with Ed Lysak, who's the chairman of the Five Cities Orchid Society Orchid Fest 2026. We're going to learn why 36 million orchids are grown in the U.S. annually, the secrets, science, and joys of growing your own orchids, and the upcoming Orchid Fest 2026, June 27 and 28 at the Napomo High School. Ed, welcome to Protecting What Matters.
Thanks, Barry. I really appreciate it.
It's great to have you on. And from 1 o'clock to 2, we're going to have one of my favorite guests, Supervisor John Pichong, District 1, San Luis Obispo County. We're going to unpack the latest version of the Slo County budget, what's been left on the cutting room floor. Private economic development and affordable housing solutions continue to be evasive for us here in the county, and Slo Cog tax increases initiative that's coming our way, higher taxes and other ballot measures that we could be looking at in the general election in November. You can call in with questions or comments, 805-238-5775, 238-KPRL. So Ed, you know, so full disclosure, Ed is my neighbor. And he has a he's a scientist by training. Ed, tell us about your background as in school and then how you got interested in orchids.
Well, in thinking about coming on the show, I realized I probably started gardening with my grandfather back when I was 3 or 4 years old, and he instilled in me an understanding of plants. Uh-huh. And then going to Rutgers as an undergraduate, part of the financial package I received was a job working at the Rutgers greenhouse. So I had the privilege of working under the geneticist who developed Burpee's Big Boy Tomato.
Huh.
And it was just a fun time. I got to go into the greenhouse, grow a bunch of plants, and they actually paid me. So it worked towards paying off my tuition. But then the real event for orchids was when Deb and I took over a distribution business down in L.A., and one of our customers gave me an orchid.
Hmm.
And it was the most terrifying gift I ever received. It's like, oh my God, what am I going to do? How do I grow this? What kind of orchid is this? So luckily, one of my customers was a great orchid grower, and he kind of took me under his wing, and I was introduced to the amazing world of orchids.
Well, and it is a pretty amazing world when you do the research on it, and I know you're going to unpack some of this. Tell us a little bit about, and just give us the high level of the Five Cities Orchid Society.
Okay, well, we're based in Rio Grande. We've been an organization that's about 35 years old, and it was started by a bunch of people that were growing orchids down in the Rio Grande, Grover Beach area. And they all got together and would have drinks together and talk orchids. And they decided, hey, why don't we organize under the American Orchid Society?
If you had mentioned the drinks, I might have come with you.
there are some benefits to gathering people with common interests, and alcohol is usually a big part mm-hmm. of it. And so we've got 100 members, and we do monthly Zoom meetings. So if anyone's interested, they can go to our website and take a look at when our Zoom presentations are. We have something like 4,000 Facebook followers. We have a YouTube channel. So a lot of outreach to just bring the joy of orchid growing to a pretty wide audience.
Yeah, and you have your own greenhouse, which, as I always say, it kind of reminds me of the Little Shop of Horrors when you go in there, because it's just chocked full. How many orchids you got in there?
Last count, somewhere between 700 and 1,000.
And the fact that you count them is a little...
Well, during COVID, I had nothing to do, so I did an Excel spreadsheet and did the inventory.
Oh, my God. That's something. All right, so based on my research, tell us, you know, it seems to me that what makes orchids a special flower is how they reproduce. Yeah. It's all about sex with these guys, right?
If you think about it, you know, what's the difference between, say, a petunia and an orchid?
Okay.
So it's structure of the flower, how the male and female parts are arranged. Importantly, in an orchid, the pollen is not transmitted by wind. It's actually encapsulated in tiny little balls, either 6 or 8 of them in each orchid flower. And they have to be transported from one orchid flower to another physically. So an insect, a bird, hummingbird, some bats. So an orchid depends on a mutual relationship with some type of pollinator to carry pollen from one orchid flower to the next. And over the last 100 million years, that relationship between the pollinator and the orchid has developed some very bizarre kind of modifications in the orchid flower.
Well, according to this now, unlike other flowers, orchids, their male and female parts are fused into one single structure.
Right. That's called the column.
Yeah. So are they hermaphroditic, or do they still require the pollination aspect of a flower? Pollination.
A lot of plants in general are not self-fertile. Mm-hmm. So if pollen falls on the anther, falls on the pistil of a single flower, usually you don't get seeds. Usually has to be another flower, a little bit genetically different, so that there's genetic variability.
Okay, and what also makes them a little different is the way they're symmetric, bilateral symmetry.
Right. Yeah.
I'm looking at but it looks like most flowers are pretty symmetrical.
Yeah.
So, but how is this different?
If you take a look at, say, a chrysanthemum or a rose, you can radially divide it, and so anytime you divide the flower, you'll get a mirror image. An orchid only has one plane, very much like a human face. Mm-hmm. You got a left and a right side of an orchid flower.
All right. And then I guess there's a lot. I mean, and I don't know if you do this yourself, but are you actually like cloning different kinds of orchids together, or somebody do that to create unique variations?
Orchid hybridizers will do that. I tried my hand at it a few times, and the problem is you do a cross. You take a toothpick, you put magnifying glasses on, you find these little encapsulated pollina, and you transfer it on a toothpick from one flower to another flower. Then you wait a year for the seed pod to develop. You send the seed pod off. It's planted out on a petri dish in sterile lab conditions. It grows there for 2 years. Then it goes into a flask for another 1 to 2 years. And then after about 3 or 4 years, you get a blooming orchid. So it's a 7-year process.
Wow.
Best left to the professionals.
Well, and somebody who's very patient.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
So, I'm gathering from my reading that orchids are fairly prehistoric in many regards.
Yeah. In researching for the show, and I do have to compliment you on the amount of research that you've put into the background of orchids. Orchids have been around for about 100 million years.
Wow. Okay. And how did they survive all the turmoil, the climate turmoil, and all this kind of stuff? Do they have some special method? I mean, some sort of evolutionary thing that they were able to figure out so that they didn't become extinct, like the dinosaurs or something like that?
Yeah, great, great question. If you think about it, 100 million years ago, orchids start to flourish. At the same time, let's say 60 million years ago, there's T-Rex running around, and this giant asteroid smacks into Central America. Mm-hmm. And basically has a nuclear winter. Mm-hmm. Well, what happens is all of the animals that are around are eating everything possible, including seeds. Mm-hmm. Well, orchid seeds are unique, and they have no stored nutrition for the orchid embryo. The orchid has to depend on a symbiotic fungus to get food to grow. So orchid seed remained viable sitting on the ground during the asteroid strike and the extinction of the dinosaurs because nothing ate orchid seeds. There were these tiny little dust-like seeds. So when things cleared and started growing again, the orchid seed was available to resprout, and orchids survived this cataclysmic die-off of the dinosaurs.
And they're very sturdy. I mean, even though they look very delicate, they're very sturdy. I mean, because, you know, in your greenhouse, you're growing these things on rocks and on, you know, logs and all this kind of stuff. So they figure out how to survive.
Yeah, the general orchid usually goes, it grows in an area where there's adverse conditions, and they go through a dormancy. And so a lot of orchids have adaptations to store water, to store nutrients, to get them through these dry periods. And if you grow a lot of houseplants and you go away on vacation for a month and come back and your watering system doesn't work, the things that survive are the orchids. Your philodendrons are dead, but the orchids have adapted to withstand these interruptions in water and food.
And are there any known flowers or plants that are known to be descendants of orchids that they ordered the, I guess, the genus and species or whatever the hell it's called? You can see how well I did in science. You know, whatever. I mean, is it unique completely?
Yeah. Orchids are, I guess the best way to describe it is there are 30,000 orchid species in nature.
Right.
And they're constantly evolving and adapting. There's mechanisms where they're evolving with their pollinators. Flower shapes change, scents change, growth patterns change. But for the most part, these 30,000 orchids are pretty stable and doing well.
All right.
The biggest danger is habitat destruction.
So a lot of people think that, so orchids are not really hard to grow then. What are some of the, what's the best way to grow them, and what are some of the mistakes? What are the hints, you know, the tips?
Great question. When I go out and do a lot of talks and we get questions from people, they usually go to Trader Joe's, they buy a moth orchid, a Phalaenopsis, and the big question is, how do I not kill it? And so...
I don't know if you can say that on the radio.
Ed. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a Phalaenopsis. but watering is critical. You only want to water the orchid when the media is dry. Orchid roots are unique in that they've got an outer covering that is like a sponge that absorbs water, but it needs oxygen to survive. And in the wild, most orchids grow as epiphytes on the tops of tree branches, and the roots are exposed to air and water. And so you've got to let an orchid root dry out in between watering. Keep it too wet and it will die.
So do they have deep roots or are they pretty shallow?
No, usually pretty shallow.
Okay.
The roots are on the surface of tree branches. Mm-hmm. And if you go away with anything from this radio broadcast, it's and my wife will love hearing this, Deb, for God's sakes, do not use ice cubes to water your orchids.
Why?
Well, as my wife Deb said, take an ice cube and hold it in your hand for 3 minutes. If your hand was a tropical root growing in Java, that's where orchids, the Phalaenopsis, are from. Cold ice cubes freeze those roots and damage the roots. So no ice cubes.
And so if you were to pick one or two bits of orchid trivia, what is your favorite orchid trivia?
Oh, let's see. There's just so much to draw upon. You have 40 years of orchid growing experience. Probably that, let's see.
Oh, we can go on to the next
question. Yeah, it's just
when you think about it, think about it. What are some of the rarest orchids that are out there?
Yeah, if you're a fan of British mysteries, there's a BritBox Midsummer Murders, and they have a whole episode dedicated to a yellow slipper orchid that comes from Borneo. And it's Rothschildanium, and they call it the Yellow Roth. And it's probably one of the rarest orchids. It certainly goes for one of the highest prices. Hmm. Difficult to grow, very rare, if not extinct in nature.
So in your experience, and I know we're going to talk about the orchid show here, you know, mostly after the break, but what, I mean, do people, are there really such rare orchids that people stroke a big check?
Oh, yeah.
Like, what have you seen? What is, like, the most... rare and most expensive orchid that you've seen?
Yeah, every now and then there's one that will come out of a tropical area. There was a slipper orchid that was discovered about 20 years ago that was very large and very purple. And it just was an amazing orchid to look at. The earliest specimens were smuggled into the U.S. illegally, and collectors that were not very ethical paid in the order of $10,000, $20,000 to get some of the early orchids. So you'll see prices when a newly discovered orchid is introduced to the orchid trade of quite a few thousand.
Wow, that's interesting. And these are all orchids hypoallergenic?
Yeah.
So they have no scent, really. Well, yeah. I guess they do have a little bit of a scent.
They have a scent, so if you're allergic to fragrance, that could be a problem. But if you have a pollen allergy, because the orchid pollen is encapsulated, it doesn't travel on the wind.
Okay.
And so had I known that, I probably would have been a botanist instead of a chemist, because I had a lot of allergies. And so I couldn't go into botany, I thought, because of my allergies. Orchids don't have pollen that gets transmitted through the air.
And in some countries, like China and the Far East, I guess, mostly, they eat orchids, don't they?
Yes. In Asian traditional medicine, there are a lot of biologically active compounds in orchids. And so grinding them up and using them in oriental medications, natural healing and whatnot. And it turns out the U.S. pharmaceutical industry is looking at a lot of orchid extracts now for biologically active compounds that may have some pharmaceutical uses.
So, do you ever eat your orchids?
No.
It's kind of like cannibalism to you, wouldn't it?
Well, actually, I take that back. I am growing some vanilla orchid, and we kind of forget at times, and you talk about what's the most interesting orchid. Probably the vanilla orchid is the one that most people know, don't realize it's actually an orchid, but it's grown in places like Mexico and Tahiti. It's a very elaborate process, but you ferment the seed pod, and that's what basically vanilla is, the flavoring.
So, you know, I know, and your wife is a weaver.
Yes.
She weaves. And can you use orchids for dyes and things like that?
Not so much dyes. Usually the fabrics are dyed with roots or stems and whatnot. You can probably get some weak yellows and greens out of some orchid extracts, but that's not a major market for the orchid trade.
So before we get into the Orchid Fest, we've got about a minute and a half left in the segment here. But before we get into the Orchid Fest, did I forget anything about orchids that you think the audience would like to know about?
Well, one of the things is, why in the world do we focus on Phalaenopsis or moth orchids? And you see them at Trader Joe's. And the reason is that particular orchid likes the same conditions that people do. Moderate light, moderate temperatures. You can have the flowers last 3 to 6 months if you treat it well. And so it's the ideal orchid to have in your kitchen or on a windowsill. Among the 30,000 orchids out there, that's the one that most closely matches your living conditions and is going to survive.
The ones that I thought were really interesting in your greenhouse were the ones that were like microscopic.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you can't even see them. Yeah. So what's the point?
Well, the point is I've collected so many orchids. I have no discipline. I'm always buying new orchids. The only orchids that will fit in my greenhouse are the miniatures. And so, yeah, I have some, and I showed you this last weekend. The flower is about an eighth of an inch wide.
If not even that, hardly. Yeah. I mean, that's, so are those easy to grow? Or?
Yeah, they're relatively easy. But, you know, you think about it, it's every part of that flower is the same bilateral symmetry, encapsulated pollen, but on a tiny, tiny scale.
Yeah, it's really something. I mean, when I go into your greenhouse, I'm worried that something's going to grab me and that'll be the end of me.
Well, it might. You have to be careful. You got to keep your wits about you.
All right. Well, so I'm going to just say that you've got the Five City Orchids Society Orchid Fest 2026 coming up this weekend at Napomo High School in Napomo, California. Obviously, you've got two sessions, Saturday and Sunday, both nine start at 9 a.m. and the Sunday ends at 4 p.m.
Correct.
Right. And Saturday 5. So I hear the bumper music. So when we come out back on the other side of the break, we're going to unpack the Orchid Fest so people know what to expect and how much fun it's going to be.
Thanks, Barry.
All right. Folks, we'll be back in about 2 minutes, so stand by.
Hey, If you ever have an accident, just where do you take your vehicle for top-notch repair? I could tell you, but isn't it better to hear from past Davis Body Shop customers? Here's what Kim M. from Atascadero had to say.
What an amazing team. I could not have asked for better service, and my car looked as good as new when they were finished. Patrick took care of me from day one, always keeping me updated about the process and their speedy timeline. I highly recommend them to all my friends and family. Excellent job.
Scott from Atascadero had this to say.
Great body shop. I was hit by another vehicle and took my truck to Davis. The work was done over a month ago and the repair work still looks great. No hidden problems. The truck left Davis in better condition than before the accident. Thanks to Tim and Patrick for all the extra work. It's really appreciated.
And that's why Davis Body Shop is the largest auto body collision specialist in San Luis Obispo County with two locations. On El Camino Real at Atascadero and on Theater Drive at Paso Chevrolet.
Listen to this real Paso Robles Glass customer where they installed 23 replacement Milgard Tuscany windows and two sliding doors.
Steve Eklund, Craig Smith as an architect and a proud and honored client of Paso Robles Glass. Hey, the boys are doing a great job. They just left. Everything is just fine. Extremely good crew. You got that crew is exceptional. They're all hardworking guys, very careful, very cautious. All is good. I think they have one more day tomorrow, wrap it up, the finished work. I'd like to set up a time to come up and see you next week. I've got a big, big project I'd like you to look at for me. Whatever works on your end, just wanted to let you know, Steve. Take care. Bye.
Get rid of your old broken windows and get new Milgard energy-efficient windows and doors with Milgard's ironclad lifetime warranty.
Welcome back to Protecting What Matters. We're visiting with Ed Lysak of Five Cities Orchid Society, chairman of the Orchid Fest 2026, coming up this weekend in Napomo. You can call in or text with questions, 805-238-5775, 238-KPRL. Ed's wife texted him during the break. What's your favorite orchid?
Yeah, my wife Deb just reminded me that it's the orchid that doesn't have a common name. It's called Stanhopa, but Deb assigned it a new common name, and it's called Space Monkey.
Ah.
And it looks like a giant claw. It's got some very weird growth habits, and the flowers only last 3 days. But the amazing thing is the orchid flower, when it opens, smells exactly like mint chocolate chip ice cream.
Wow.
And it's a dead ringer for mint chocolate chip ice cream.
Well, and so you're going to make some into mint chocolate chip ice cream?
Whenever it blooms, I find myself gravitating to Trader Joe's and buying some ice cream.
All right. So tell us a little bit, what kind of folks would be interested in attending the Orchid Fest this weekend?
Good question. We target different audiences. And the first audience is I'll call the Barry audience. It's somebody that doesn't have a botany background, that maybe grows rose bushes at home, but wants to see into the world of these orchid fanatics like myself. And so it's a cheap trip to Costa Rica. Mm-hmm. You just drive down to Napomo, and you get a chance to see what orchids are all about. We're doing guided tours, so we're going to explain to people exactly what they're looking at. The first couple orchid shows I went to, I had no idea what some of these things were. So we're going to help people understand what orchids are all about and why people are so crazed mm-hmm. that they collect and grow these things. And then the second group are people like me, the orchid fanatics, that, you know, we'll go to anything if it has an orchid in its name. But the vast majority of people that attend are just people that want to go out, have a nice day, not deal with politics or anything controversial, listen and learn about how to grow an orchid. Maybe they got one or two on their windowsill. And just pick up some interesting information and maybe buy an orchid.
So, again, how many exhibitors do you have?
Well, we've got 7 orchid vendors, and they're coming from Santa Barbara. We've got Emerald City Orchids that's coming down from Seattle. Joe Ambritz from Carpinteria. And so it's a wide range of orchid growers. We have one that's bringing orchids in, and they just flew in 2 boxes from Thailand. So we're going to have a bunch of Asian orchids. So a real good smattering of orchids from around the world. Easy to grow and some that are really difficult to grow.
And what kind of, when you say, I'm looking at your website, Docent Tours. What is that all about?
Yeah, the whole idea there is the new generation really wants an experience. They don't want to just go in and do a transaction and buy an orchid. They want something where they can experience what orchids are all about. So the docent tours are people like myself that are going to go around and explain, what are you looking at? Why is that orchid unique? Why did that win an award? Why is that worth $100,000 and this works worth 40 cents?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what is the orchid trade doing these days? Why are some orchids really popular, others not? And if you want to take it on a challenge and grow a really challenging orchid, how do you go about growing that particular orchid?
All right. And then let me see, what else? You got some, you're going to have demonstrations on orchid repotting, mounting, and general orchid care.
Yeah, huh? Those are always fun. We get about 30 or 40 people sit around a large table. We have some of our senior orchid growers that are really experienced. And they'll take an orchid and they'll take a sawzall to it and cut it up into pieces and show how to repot it, what kind of potting media to use. Because a lot of people are intimidated. If you get an orchid to grow and bloom and do well for 3 or 4 years, you have to repot it. And that can be a pretty traumatic experience for the orchid owner and for the orchid.
Why? Well, I know why the orchid owner, because look at orchid, what is an orchid owner? But I mean, what about, why is it traumatic for the orchid?
Orchids in nature don't usually get divided and repotted.
They tend
to be pretty sedentary. And so you've got to make sure that you don't introduce fungal diseases and damage. And you have to know particularly what time in an orchid life cycle to repot it. And so we teach the kind of indicators to look at to know when to repot an orchid and then how to go about doing it.
And I mean, so you literally split the root ball or something? Is that what you're doing?
And that's the beauty of growing orchids. Every 3 to 5 years, my 700 orchids become 1,400 orchids. So you have to join an orchid club so that you can trade off these orchids. Otherwise, you know, you become inundated with orchids.
Well, I understand there's millions of surplus face masks that people weave from COVID. So maybe you'll have a bunch of those so you don't infect the orchids.
But the good thing is human viruses do not transmit into orchids.
Oh, okay.
And orchid viruses
All right.
don't transmit to humans.
So we're hypoallergenic to them,
That's
too.
That's right, exactly.
Okay. Got
good
point. It's a mutual
That's right.
thing.
That's right.
And then you've got a bunch of artists that are going to be there?
Yeah. At Napomo High School, there's a large outdoor courtyard. And so we're taking advantage of that. We're bringing in potterers, people that will make pots. So you buy your orchid, you go outside, see an artisan, and you can get a pot designed specifically for orchids. There's going to be some rock and mineral people.
Figures.
Succulent Society is going to be there, and a couple artists that use orchids as their decoration on a variety of woven goods and whatnot.
All right, so that sounds like a lot of fun. I may have to go to this, you know?
And then we've got a food truck, and so we'll be offering Mexican cuisine, so you can listen to your orchid demonstration, eat a taco, and just have a great time.
All right. And then I guess there's an admission price to this, but it's kind of a charity to one of your members who passed away recently, right? Tell us about Clive. Clive was an interesting guy.
Some of the listeners may know Clive Gray from Arroyo Grande. He was a good friend of mine and Deb's. He was our next door neighbor down in Claremont. So we've known him for about 40 years. And before he passed away last year, he said, I'm going to leave you a little bit of money. Do something nice for the Orchid Society. They're great people, and more people need to grow orchids. So with the bequest that Clive gave, you pay $5 to get into Orchid Fest. And as soon as you pay your $5 to get in, you get a $5 token to use towards a purchase.
Mm-hmm.
So the goal is to get everyone who comes in, instead of being a looky-loo and just look at the pretty orchids and leave, you've got this $5 token in your pocket that's going to burn a hole in your pocket, and hopefully it'll encourage you to buy an orchid.
Okay. Well, folks, we're coming up on the end of the break here. So, Ed, thank you so much for coming in. I want to mention that, again, you can go and learn more about this at the FCOS.org website, right? And I also want to mention, we didn't mention the folks said that you actually do YouTubes on orchids.
Yeah, if you go to YouTube and go to Five Cities Orchid Society, we are on YouTube channel.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got 1,000 local followers that watch every video we turn out.
A star of stage and screen in the orchid world.
And now the radio.
And now the radio. Ed, I know I had to drag you in here. Thanks for coming in and talking about this.
Barry, it was a pleasure.
All right.
A lot of fun.
Folks, I'll be back with you on the other side of the break with John Pishong, and we're going to have to get into politics probably. So we'll talk to you in a few minutes.
Join us next Tuesday for Protect What Matters the Most with Barry Fisher. Send your questions and show topic ideas to barry@blazinbear.com. AM 1230 KPRL, 99.3 FM, KPRL.com, Paso Robles, Atascadero, Templeton.
It's